Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw this guy with curly blonde hair standing at the end of the room. One of the girls that was babysitting says, "There's something in this house." And I said, "There is." I said, "Did it say hello?" And she said, "The piano started playing notes on the piano."
Welcome to The Ghost Files. My name is Karina Machado and I'm the author of Spirit Sisters, Where Spirits Dwell, and Love Never Dies. For decades, I've been listening to ordinary people tell me about their extraordinary experiences with the spirit world. Now, I'm going to share these moments with you, bringing you all new interviews every week with people who have a spooky story to tell. From seeing an apparition, to receiving signs from beyond, and messages from late loved ones, plus so much more. What can an encounter with the dead teach us about living? Find out each week on The Ghost Files. My guest today on The Ghost Files is Bronwyn Lane, a writer, producer, director, and publicist from Melbourne. On the phone the first time we spoke, Bronwyn introduced herself by saying, "I see ghosts. I saw one last night." Of course, I thought, yep, here's my latest guest. Today, Bronwyn will share some of these intriguing encounters with us, but what we're going to explore in depth is her beautiful connection with her late brother, Justin, who's let her know time and again that he's by her side. A very reassuring thought for anyone who's lost someone that they love. Welcome to The Ghost Files.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so lovely to speak with you. And as I mentioned in the intro, the first thing that you said to me when we first spoke a couple of weeks ago was, "I see ghosts. I saw one last night," which I'm still thinking about. Can you tell us, please, Bronnie, about what you saw then and have you seen any since?
I'm sort of thinking about it now because sometimes it happens and then it's just such a common part of life these days that I kind of forget about it. But from memory, I woke up in the middle of the night and it was just standing there as per usual looking at me. I'm always like, why are they looking at me?
My goodness.
I get a massive fright. And I sat up and screamed and it didn't – usually they leave when I scream, but it didn't. And then it did go. But from memory, I believe it was a black shape, this one.
So you couldn't tell whether it was a man, a woman, or
– I felt like it had a male energy to it. The ones that really stick out to me that I always remember is when it's a child.
Wow. How often do you see child spirits?
Well, I would say that I probably see something every two to three months.
Okay.
And it varies. Sometimes it's a male black shape. Sometimes it's a female white shape. Sometimes it's a child. I remember I lived in this house once and I saw this is probably the weirdest one I've ever seen. I lived in this house on Beach Road in Albert Park, Beaconsfield Road, which is along the beach, and the house, I always felt like there was something in the house. And then I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw this guy with curly blonde hair standing at the end of the room and he was just looking at me.
Gosh.
and I screamed, as I always do, because I get such a shock when I see them, because I'm usually drifting into sleep or I've been, you know, asleep and then I wake up and I see them. And then I remember he just stayed there and I just stared at him and then I shut my eyes and then he was gone. And then I discovered maybe 2 months later that a young guy had committed suicide in that house.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, oh, my God, this must have been who was visiting.
Wow.
So he was sleeping in his old room probably.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. So, and Bronwyn, you were very small when you first saw a spirit, just a little girl, weren't you? Tell us about that.
Yeah, that one I'll never forget. So I woke up and I rolled over and I looked at the door and I saw a black hooded figure walking past and I thought it was my father. And I said, wait, I want to tell you something like that. And it turned and it looked at me and then I realized it wasn't my father, that it was actually nothing. It was just a black shape. And then I said, oh, don't worry about it. I've forgotten what I wanted to say. And it just turned away. And then I rolled over and I sang my little, I had this little song that I'd created in my head that I would sing to myself when I would get really frightened from seeing things or having weird things happen in the house.
Really? You had a little song that you made up?
Yeah.
Do you remember how it went?
I do. It was Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck running around, riding around in a Tonka truck. Are they scared? No, they're brave. They wear supersonic underwear.
It's good. It's got comedic value. I love it.
Yeah. So, and then my children now, they, you know, when they get scared, they've got their own versions of this song. So now we've got Finn and Jake from Adventure Time.
Oh.
And Finn and Jake, yeah, they're great.
Oh, that's fab. And how old were you when you saw this black hooded thing and when you made up that song?
I reckon I was about 6 or 7.
Okay.
I was under 10 years of age.
Yes.
And my father was still living with us, so that would put me under the age of 7.
Okay.
Because he left when I was 7. So I was young, little, and I was still sharing a room with my brother.
Okay. So you grew up in a haunted house.
I did. I grew up in a very old part of Ballarat in Victoria, and our house is an old miner's cottage. And underneath the house, you would go and explore and you'd find all sorts of old bottles and jars and things that had obviously been there for a very long time. And just weird things would happen in the house where doors would just slam shut on their own. And probably one of the most vivid memories I have is sitting in the lounge room with my mother, and the kitchen was next to the lounge room, and we could hear something going through, like it sounded like drawers being open and shut. So if you think about the sound that a drawer opens when it's got cutlery in it,
it's distinctive.
Yeah, and then shut, and then like cupboards were being opened and shut. And I remember my mother saying to me, go and see what that is. And I said, no, you go and see what it is. She said, I'm not going to go see what it is. I said, well, I'm not going to go see what it is. And then it stopped. But, you know.
So nobody went in the end?
No, God, no. We were too petrified. Whenever the ghost was around, we certainly were not going anywhere near it. So, things like that. Mm. I think I mentioned doors slamming shut, going into rooms and just feeling like, particularly in the front room where I would practice the piano, I'd be practicing the piano and always feel a presence around me. And it was really. Oh, you know, they use the word haunting. Yeah, it felt very haunting.
Right.
I didn't like it. I didn't like practicing on my own in the house. And I still to this day, I have a thing about the piano lid has to be down because I'm so petrified I'll hear the piano playing on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Weird thing, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
And I actually remember my piano, I was living in another house about 4 years ago. And one of the girls that was babysitting for me, I came home and she said, is this house, she said, is there something in this house? And I said, there is. I said, did it say hello? And she said, the piano started playing notes on the piano.
Oh, it happened.
Yeah. And because I remember when I moved in, it grabbed my hand one night.
Oh. Were you?
Hello.
What happened there? Were you in bed?
I was in bed. I was just sort of, I had carpal tunnel syndrome when I was pregnant, and sometimes my hands ache and I have this habit of sleeping with my hands lying out of the bed, and my hand was just lying over the side of the bed, and next minute I felt something grab my fingers and pull my hand.
Oh. Was that frightening?
Yeah, I was petrified.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I remember I'd be reading in that room and sometimes the door handle, you would actually see it twist, the knob would twist and the door would just open of its own accord.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've seen stuff through. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just saying maybe I've just got things following me around.
Could be. I remember in our earlier correspondence you mentioned that you've seen a nun once, the ghost of a nun.
Yep, that's right, in another house that I lived in, a nun, which was interesting because I went to Catholic school and I was very close to a particular nun who passed away in a dreadful car accident.
Oh.
So, and I used to pray, you pray or whatever, and I would always include Sister Mary in my prayers. So I seem to have interesting things seem to appear when I'm really struggling and I'll be really struggling and then I'll have something like that happen. So, yeah, I think it's just, I don't know. I always think about, this is going to get, this is getting very weird, but I always think about string theory and they talk about these different dimensions.
Yes.
And they say that there's seven. And I always think, well, if you consider, you know, heaven, earth, if you want to say heaven and hell and purgatory and the present and the past and the future, you know, you could sort of say that these dimensions would all, and parallel universe, you could sort of say, well, there's your seven dimensions in a way.
Yep, you can think of it that way, yep.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's getting very, you know, I shouldn't say things like that because the science people will tell me to be quiet.
Oh, well, I don't think even they know everything there is to know, the science people. But and yeah, it's fascinating to think about, you know, parallel dimensions, and I've always been interested in past lives, but now I'm thinking of them more as simultaneous lives, as in everything is arising at the one time, the past, the present and the future. So that that has, yeah, parallels to what you're saying as well.
Yeah. It is interesting, particularly I know that I also have had recurring dreams throughout my life. And I remember as a child I used to dream about this particular bridge and I'd always be in a car and approaching the bridge and then I'd sort of drive past and the bridge would be gone and it was just a really distinctive bridge.
Right.
And then when I moved to Scotland and I was in my first marriage, he was driving me all over Scotland, you know, showing me things. And then we drove down this road and I said, oh, my God, it's my bridge.
You saw it.
I saw the bridge that I'd dreamed of as a, you know, growing up, a recurring dream.
Yeah, so that gives rise to that idea that it is all happening at once and some people for some reason can access different points on the continuum. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, we just know so little about our brain really,
yes,
don't we?
That's right. So premonitions, Bronnie, you've had those too.
Yeah, I have.
So that dream being one of, I guess we could consider that one of them. But I'm
Yeah, and I think probably the one that freaked me out the most would be the Black Saturday premonition, where I went to bed, had this dream that there was smoke everywhere and people were dying and the earth was trembling, you know, like earthquake sort of trembling, and I was on top of a building and I could see the fire and I was saying they're dying, they're all dying.
Oh.
And I got up in the morning and I said to my mother, I had the most awful dream last night. I said it was like a natural disaster and a lot of people died. I said and there was smoke everywhere. I said, I really hope nothing bad happens today. And then there was Black Saturday. That was the morning of Black Saturday that I said that to my mother.
Oh, the morning of. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then the next day I said to my mother, do you remember I told you about my dream? And she said, I'm trying to forget your dream.
Oh.
Yeah, she's a good Catholic lady. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess it would have been very disturbing. And how did you feel to know that you'd dreamt of the disaster the night before?
I think the problem with those things is that you might have those dreams, but you have really nothing. There's nothing really that you can do about them because how do you know if it's just a dream or if it's actually something's going to happen?
Exactly.
Yeah, and because you know you'd be like some lunatic on a American sitcom if you raced into the, you know,
yeah,
into the fire station quick. There's going to be a fire.
That's it, yeah. So it's kind of futile in a way. So, yeah, it's intriguing to think what purpose they do serve.
Yeah.
And whether it is just a tuning in of sorts that happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like pregnant. I'm just trying to think because I must have been pregnant because I remember looking at the paper and people describing how as the fire came towards them the earth was shaking.
Oh.
And that was the thing that had been really distinctive in the dream. And I was thinking it was an earthquake. Maybe it's an earthquake.
Bronnie, you had a premonition of your brother Justin's sudden passing in 2010. Can you share that story, please?
Yeah. So I was born on Mother's Day and my brother was born on St. Patrick's Day, so that's interesting, a little tidbit.
Yes.
But what happened was we'd all been celebrating Mother's Day and my birthday together in Dalesford. And when we were saying goodbye and, you know, going to jump in our respective cars and leave, I just had this thought that I should just go and tell him you love him. You might never see him again. And I went over to him and I said, I love you. And he said, I love you too. And and then he said, oh, you're nearly 40. And I said, oh, you'll be 42 one day. And he said, not me. He said, I'll never be 40.
Wow.
And then the next day he had a massive heart attack and essentially died in a classroom. And then it took them about 45 minutes to get his heart to go, and it took the fireman 2 hours to get him out of the building. So, I mean, he was gone. Like, there's just no coming back from that. So then he was on life support for 11 days, and then, you know, they told us he was brain dead and he would have had no quality of life, you know. So then we had to make that horrible decision to turn the machines off. But then we did that, and, you know, I was very blessed to be with him as he passed, and I just, you know, just whispered in his ear, you know, just go into the light, go into the light, as he died.
And then after that, Ronnie, you had some very beautiful and further moving experiences with his spirit.
I did. So I remember I was in the kitchen with my mother at our house, and I was saying to her, he's with you, he's with us, he'll always be with you, you can talk to him anytime, go on, Mum, talk to him. And she said, oh, he's, you know, she was, as one can understand, you know, stricken with grief. And she said, oh, stop it, it's not true, and, you know, sort of thing. And then all of a sudden a door that's next to the kitchen that is impossible to open without human interaction, it just slid open of its own accord.
Amazing.
And I have a sliding door. And I said to my mother, see, that's him telling you he's here.
What did your mother do when she saw that?
I can't remember. It's that time after he died, I just sort of, there's moments, there's just things I remember, but that's one of them. I just know that the door slid open and I said, that's, see, he's here. I think I spoke to him, Justin, hi, we love you and miss you, but we understand it was your time to go.
It's amazing that you were able to say that, and I know that you shared a really profound and beautiful bond, the two of you.
Like, not everybody has siblings, but, you know, everybody has a different sort of relationship with their siblings. And I think because my father left when my brother was so little, that in a way I took on a, not quite a co-parenting role, but in a way a co-parenting role. And my mother, even when we were deciding to turn the machines off, she said, it's your choice as much as it's mine. And I remember he was different. He had a thing called Klinefelter syndrome, and he was probably Asperger's. But, you know, that's sort of become something that's very diagnosed these days, whereas back then it wasn't. It was just like, that kid's weird.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, he had learning disability. So he was different. He just had his own, you know, he was just a different unit. Mm-hmm. And I felt very protective of him. And with having a single mother and growing up in the 70s and 80s in Ballarat, you know, I know when my mother would have to make decisions, we would make those decisions together. You know, should he go to boarding school? Yes, Mum, I think you should send him to boarding school, get him out of that school where he's being bullied.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, getting into fights with other kids because they would bully him, and because our father was gay as well, you know, bisexual, he left to pursue a gay relationship in Melbourne. Although my mother says that she said, go and do that, and you've got to pick, you know, you can't have both.
Right.
Fair enough. And, you know, I guess it was the 80s and things were a bit more liberal. You know, we sort of had that connection, and half the reason I have my own business is because he found that he struggled so hard with work that I created a company so that I could hire him.
Right.
And just as my company was starting to take off, he died, and I just felt like, oh, that's so cruel. He was, you know, just started to study teaching at university. He was finally getting his life together. It seemed like he'd found his niche.
Yeah.
And then next minute he has a massive heart attack and dies. And, you know, we had that experience of the door opening. And I remember when I came back to Melbourne after he had died, sitting at my computer to try and work, and I'd never had a screensaver on my Mac before.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was very into computers and technology, and he fixed computers and a big gamer. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and there was the most beautiful screensaver on my computer that I'd never had a screensaver.
Oh.
And I just knew that that was him communicating to me.
Yes.
And sometimes, not very often, sometimes that screensaver will come back and I'll know that that's him just letting me know. Like, he doesn't visit me very often now, but just sometimes when I'm really struggling, I'll get a visitation in a dream or like the screensaver, or there'll be something.
Okay, something to give you comfort in a trying time. Yeah.
Yeah, just to let me know I'm still here.
Yes.
You know, there's been times when I've asked directly for help and received help, and times when I've just been struggling and he's come to me in the dream and held my hand and said, it's going to be okay, you're going to get through this, just know that I'm holding your hand through it all.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah, which is really lovely. And I really feel strongly that he looks over my daughter to protect her, because he had this really unusual mannerism where he would hold his arm, one arm, he'd hold one arm with his other arm, but he'd do it behind his back. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes.
Yeah, and my daughter does that.
Oh.
I've never really seen anybody else do it, just like a sort of like almost a relaxing thing.
Yeah.
And that's what he did, and he did that his entire life. And then my daughter wouldn't even know that because she was two when he died.
Right.
So it's just every time I see her do that, I'm actually a bit freaked out by it.
Yeah. So that connection continues into the next generation as well. And Bronnie, I know that actually not long after he did pass, you had a type of epiphany, a type of vision of his energy and where he was traveling to.
I was falling asleep and I had this idea came into my mind, sort of like a vision in a way, of his energy, of him collapsing in the classroom and his energy sort of like a slingshot just going all the way out into the universe and going as far as it could go, like as if you're pulling a slingshot back and then just being let go and that energy just coming all the way back in, sort of like to be recycled. And I felt like at that point probably reincarnation does exist, but there's a part of us that's left behind.
I see, yeah.
And I felt like I hope that whatever his next life is, that it's a beautiful life, and I, you know, just had thanks that there would always be a part of him also with us.
Yes. Yes, that's a lovely idea, isn't it, to think that.
Yeah.
It's like different aspects of us in different dimensions as well in a way.
Yeah, and I guess if we think of energy, and it's interesting to think whatever it is that makes us us could go somewhere, and that energy could be split apart.
And yet never be apart in a way, yeah.
Which is interesting. That then makes me think, why is it that we meet people sometimes and we've never met them but they seem so familiar to us?
That's right.
Or we just connect with somebody for some reason and we might say, oh, it's because we have common interests, but actually it's almost like looking in a mirror when you're talking to them.
It's absolutely intriguing. And I know that for you, Bronnie, losing your brother in this way and your contact with him and his reassurances that he's still with you, that really led you to reassess your life and what you wanted to create in your life. Could you share something about this?
So I guess I'd started my company and, you know, I sort of had dreams of being a filmmaker and, you know, a really respected writer. But I probably was just plodding along as a single mother, and I'd released a children's book and, you know, I was probably waiting for things to come to me a little bit. I think after that happened, once I'd gotten through the grief, which was crippling, I was much more driven to just get out there and do everything that I wanted to do. If I wanted to write screenplays. If I wanted to work in the film industry, to do everything I could to do that. If I wanted to write more books and get them published. And it became very apparent to me that, you know, we have this life and we really need to make the absolute most of this life, you know, to really cherish every moment, even though it can be hard, and to really try and focus on living now and just to, you know, work on manifesting what I want.
Yeah. So what I love about what you're saying is that in a way what Justin has done is gifted you this beautiful sort of burst of creativity and willingness to embrace the moment.
what it made me do was actually work harder to achieve the things I really wanted to do rather than sit back and wait for it to happen. It sort of made me say, nobody's going to come to you and make that happen. You need to make that happen. There's this idea of you look at your tombstone and what does it say? I think I'd like mine to say, I really did everything I could to try to bring joy to others and, you know, leave a legacy for my children.
Well, that's a very inspiring message, Bronwyn, and I think it's lovely to leave our guests with that thought, you know, that to live in the moment and to do everything you can for the ones you love as well. So just to finish with our last question that I put to all of my guests, what can an encounter with the dead teach us about living?
I think what it tells us is that nothing ever really ends because nobody knows what's on the other side really. If we start to think of death not as the most worst experience that could ever happen to us, I think that it would help us, you know, cope better with our grief and the loss of loved ones, and also to not be so fearful of death ourselves.
Totally. Very, very wonderful points. Well, thank you so much, Bronwyn, for sharing your amazing experiences with us today and your very, very profound and lovely story about your connection with Justin. It was a joy to have you on today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for opening up the Ghost Files with us. I'm Karina Machado, and we'll be back next week with more true life tales of spooky encounters. So please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others just like you to find the podcast. In the meantime, you can check out my other podcast about mysteries and marvels, Spirit Sisters, based on my best-selling book. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time for more Goosebumps.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.